Jesse Corcoran Podcast.
Just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Friday, December 9th, 2022, 68 days until those beautiful baseball fields all over the state of Florida and all over the state of Arizona start being populated again with spring training activity. 68 days. It is coming, kids. It is coming. Well, I have to be careful how I say this because I don't want to offend the very, very nice, intelligent people who also happen to listen to the J.C. Corcoran podcast and who also frequent my social media sites, which for me is just Facebook at the Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Now, I want to tell you, and this is absolutely true. It is absolutely true. I have one of those little blood pressure machines that you buy for 20 or 30 bucks at CVS. And I have that around because I've had a history of issues with regard to my heart and my blood pressure, and might as well throw cholesterol in there too. But anyhow, there was a point yesterday where I actually came home and checked my blood pressure because of the kind of day I was having yesterday. And I was having that kind of day because of social media. I thought I was going to lose my mind because it's, do you ever have this feeling like, okay, every idiot, every misguided fool, everybody with an opinion and absolutely no facts to back anything up seemed to find my comments page on Facebook yesterday. And it didn't matter what the subject was. Yesterday was a very, very busy news day and sports day. And by the way, the Cardinals have a news conference scheduled for 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, and people already running around speculating, and my guys tell me that all it is the introduction of Wilson Contreras, and that, like, the ghost of Mickey Mantle isn't going to show up or anything. I don't think it's going to be anything unexpected. At least this is what I'm told. But it was everything yesterday. It was everything. No matter what. There's nothing more obnoxious. There's two things that happen on social media that just drive me batshit crazy. One of them is when I post something and somebody comments, who cares? Well, you know, here's the thing. If I am doing the work to spot something that I think is interesting that you should know about, and I take the trouble to put it on both of my Facebook pages, well, I must have thought that there was something redeeming in it, that it was either interesting or funny or just something that you should know about. And I go to the trouble to do that and post it, and you basically walk up and take a dump on it by posting, who cares? I'm telling you, really, really, seriously, pisses me off. Usually what I do, and I'm dead serious about this, usually what I do is I send them a message going, if you write that again, if you post that again, you're gone. And I don't know, by the way, I have to digress here for a moment. I don't know if this seems like a lot for somebody in my position. If you're, you know, an accountant and you have a Facebook page and you have all your friends and neighbors and, you know, all your family members and everything on it, then yeah, I guess this would sound like something excessive. But when you are somebody who has been flapping his trap for almost 40 years in St. Louis and you do a daily podcast and, you know, I have opinions and I'm not shy about expressing them, then I guess it shouldn't be a surprise that I have over 1,100 people that I have unfriended. I got a list of about 1,100 people the last time I checked who got the boot. Now, you might be saying to yourself, Jesus, JC, sort of an itchy trigger finger there, huh? But no, not really. If you saw the stuff that people wrote to me, you'd say, well, I would have fucking done it too. So that's where we are in terms of that. But it was just crazy yesterday. No matter what I wrote. So that's the first thing that irritates me. Who cares? The second thing, and this should irritate everybody, by the way, you post something and somebody posts in the comment section the exact opposite of what you posted. And I'm not saying that people can't have contrary opinions to mine. That's not what I'm talking about. It's just sort of like, again, you know, he wrote something I don't like. I'll just take a dump all over it. And again, if you're going to state a contrary opinion, you've got to explain why. You can't just go, if I say Wilson Contreras, great trade for the Cardinals, you come along and go, no, it sucked. That's what I'm talking about. Now, if you say, here's the reasons why it sucked, now you got something. But I'll tell you one thing with regard to Wilson Contreras, and it mystifies me as to how volatile this discussion has become, because ultimately you have to ask the question for people who don't like the idea of Wilson Contreras coming in. I got to be honest, it's not because of statistics. It's not because of anything other than the fact that he's coming here from the Cubs. It's like, We talked about this, about how provincial the city of St. Louis is and how small-minded people look when they're only cognizant of one baseball team in the entire both leagues. There's a lot of baseball going on out there, okay? And it's wonderful that you're dedicated to the Cardinals and you're a great fan and everything like that, but not to the exclusion of other players wearing other uniforms also being good. It's like Jerry Seinfeld said, you know, basically we're cheering for uniforms. We're fans of laundry. Get a guy play for the Cardinals, he's wonderful, you cheer him on. He gets traded to the Mets, he comes back, you boo him. Boo, you're terrible. But God bless Bernie Nicholas, that's all I can say. Because when it comes right down to it, you want to know the shit that's going on, Bernie has always been on top of it. Always. From Kelly, the signing of Contreras is worrisome to me. It appears he only caught 57 games last year, played 24 in left field and 3 at third base, and started 30 at DH. He missed a bunch of games due to an ankle injury. This is supposed to be our catcher for the next 5 years. And I wrote, at least he missed because of an actual injury instead of a basketball team in Puerto Rico, like Yachty. People thinking Andrew Kisner should have been given the opportunity with his, you know, 198 batting average? Come on. Our old pal Van Lorenz from over at the river said a 3-4-5 of Goldschmidt, Arenado, and Contreras. That's pretty fucking strong. You are right, Van. Absolutely right. Not another Cub. We don't have luck with Cubs. Yeah, Lou Brock, Bruce Sutter, Lee Smith, Tony La Russa, and about 10 dozen other Cards players were at some time Cubs in their respective careers. I seem to remember them being pretty good. All right, Bernie, take it away. Over the past two seasons, St. Louis catchers slugged .315, Contreras .452. Over the past two seasons, St. Louis catchers had a .594 OPS, Contreras .797. Using park and league adjusted runs, Cards catchers were 32% below league average offensively over the past two seasons. Contreras, 21% above. Contreras, a 5.6 WAR, that's wins against replacement, over the last two seasons, which ranked fourth among regular Major League Baseball catchers. Looking at the numbers, let's say it again. The Cardinals wisely purchased a lot more production to strengthen their weakest area offensively. Let's talk about consistency. Contreras was the best, biggest, and most consistent bat on the catcher free agent market since he arrived in the majors with the Cubs in 2016. Here's where Contreras ranks among catchers that had at least 1,500 plate appearances between 2016 and 2022. Contreras, first in OPS, third in total bases, third in extra base hits, fourth in slugging, fifth in homers, fifth in doubles, sixth in RBIs. And there's about another three pages of stuff like this. So yell and scream if you want and complain because you think the Cardinals blew this or that Contreras is no good, but the numbers don't support your claim. This is the sort of stuff I deal with. It's like people are just yakking away. It's like, do you have any idea what you're talking about? I'll answer that for you. Brittany Griner had one dope say, well, I don't respect her because she's a drug addict. Wait a minute. What? She's a drug addict? She had a little cannabis oil in her bag trying to leave Russia a year ago, and that makes her a drug addict. And when somebody posts something that stupid, I always go and I look at their homepage. I look at their timeline. And sure enough, flags, eagles, and churches all over their timeline. These fucking church people, sanctimonious as shit. Oh, and by the way, even the family of Paul Whelan said, this guy, Joe Biden, we know for a fact he's doing everything in his power to try to get our brother out of the place. It's not a fantasy football league where you just get to pick and choose people. Okay, we'll take one Paul Whelan and we'll take one Brittany Griner and what would you like? And this is not how the game is played. Plus, you're dealing with Putin, who's nuts anyhow. And the cases aren't the same. And again, you don't know what you're talking about. And I put up a screenshot where they talked about the quote. It was the actual quote from Paul Whelan's sister, who said, you know, we know he's doing everything and blah, blah, blah. And was very, very supportive of Joe Biden. And that same guy writes back and posts that, oh, I don't know, I had the TV on all day today. And I never heard anybody use that quote. I'm like, oh, now you're calling me a liar. Well, I have a name for you. Gone. 1101. By the way, Donald Trump had two full years to try to get Paul Whelan out of Russia. And he supposedly had this wonderful relationship with Vladimir Putin. So what are we talking about here? Ugh. I still got people yakking with me about The Fablemans. Now, The Fablemans is a Steven Spielberg movie, and it was highly touted. A lot of people calling it the movie of the year, and I saw it. And in addition to the movie really just not working on any level, it's also too goddamn long at 2.5 hours. And so I gave it a 1 out of 5 corks. People are like, well, Rotten Tomatoes says 83%. I don't give a fuck what Rotten Tomatoes says. I saw the movie. My job is to tell you exactly what I thought. Jeez, it's Christmas and I'm in a terrible mood. By the way, my blood pressure was up about 20 points. I got to stop this. By the way, The Fablemans has been out for, what is it now, 3 weeks, I believe. I think it's 3 weeks. It's made $6 million. That's it. That would qualify it as one of the least successful movies of the year. Now, I'm going to tell you something. We're getting towards the end of the year here, and you're going to start to see these critics' lists of the best movies of the year. And on those lists, a lot of them list The Fabelmans. And I'm not surprised, because this is the kind of movie that only critics like and audiences have no interest in. And also a wide spectrum of the critics community is Jewish. And I said in the review that the only thing I can think of is maybe if you're Jewish, you might possibly see something in here that gives it some sort of redeeming quality. But if not, I'm sorry. And also a lot of critics are afraid to be critical of a movie made by Steven Spielberg, like it's against the rules or something. You can't criticize Steven Spielberg. Oh, yes, you can. And I did. And The Fableman sucks, okay? $6 million. That's it. Nobody's interested in the movie. Now, again, there is a difference between how a movie performs commercially and whether or not artistically it's a good movie. I'm not going to try to pretend that that doesn't exist. There's lots of movies that I've recommended that have been box office failures but are wonderful movies, and for whatever reason, there's all sorts of things that play into a movie's success or often failure. A lot of times if a movie opens up against some sort of blockbuster and everybody goes sees the blockbuster and nobody goes to see the artistic movie, I mean, that happens all the time. You know, I told you, there's an embargo on the review of Babylon. This is the movie you already started to see commercials for on TV. It opens the week of the 19th, and we're going to be taking a little break as we approach Christmas. But we'll get that review in when the studio allows me to do so. And a lot of people calling this the movie of the year, too. It is interesting. You get towards the end of the year, and all of a sudden, there's a lot of movies that are the movie of the year. Margot Robbie, I'll tell you right now, Margot Robbie is going to get an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor, or Best Actress. Now, does that mean the movie is good? Can't tell you yet. So, like I said, anyhow, yesterday was probably the worst day I've had in a long time, and we might just have to change the rules. I don't know. We might have to change the rules, because I can't live like this. I can't be looking at this negative bullshit all the time. It's driving me nuts. Oh, I almost forgot. One last thing. You know, you see these commercials and they splash up a big quote in block letters, best movie of the year, but it only flashes up there for like a second. And in the corner, in tiny, tiny, tiny little print, is the attribution of that quote. Now, it used to be very, very different. I got quoted once in a while. I didn't fall into that trap. It was a racket, but you know, there are good and very legitimate film critics, always have been. Roger Ebert, Gene Siskel, they've been gone for a long time, but there's other good critics out there, and they're frequently quoted. But now, the rules have changed, and the racket just continues. Anybody hear of Alex Sevalev? Alex Sevalev. He called The Fabelmans one of the best movies of the year. Alex Sevalev is an Irish film critic who also is in real estate, and he runs a website called Film Threat, and he thinks Fabelmans is the best movie of the year. Sasha Stone, somebody I've never heard of before, identifies herself as a Russian photographer, and she has a website called Awards Daily, and she says that Babylon, the movie of Brad Pitt, Margot Robbie, is mind-blowing. And that's another little game that gets played in Hollywood. Mind-blowing doesn't tell you anything about the movie, like whether it's good or bad. It's mind-blowing. It could be mind-blowing by how awful it is. I used to work with a guy who was what we call in the business a quote whore. Just, you know, lived to see his name in the paper back when people read newspapers, but you know, they would have these TV commercials and ads in the paper, and it would be like, Tom Brown says, what a cast. Well, what a cast doesn't say anything about the quality of the movie, but he got his name in the paper in an ad that runs, you know, all over the country, and so he was happy with that. What a cast. Then when you ask him, well, how was the movie? Oh, it sucked. Oh, that's how the game is played, huh? All right. There's just no integrity left in anything anymore. Everybody's crooked. What is today's date? You betcha. Friday, December 9th. You know what that means? These fucking Medicare supplement ads are finally over. Jimmy Walker, William Devane, Joe Namath, see ya. Weather sucks in St. Louis. That fog yesterday, jeez, that almost didn't ever go away the entire day. Usually fog burns off with the warming of the sun and the heating of the day, but that didn't happen yesterday, and today is not pretty looking either. But I'll tell you this, by about the middle of next week, towards the end of next week, you'll be wishing for the fog, because the temperature is really, it's going to get cold. It's going to get really, really cold, probably by midweek next week. And a big chunk of southern Illinois is getting a new area code. I think it's in July of next year. Big, big chunk of southern Illinois. Speaking of weather, and we were just a moment ago, tomorrow is the first anniversary of the Kentucky and Edwardsville tornadoes. And, you know, the structure, the way they are building these Amazon warehouses, these fulfillment centers, as they call them, and other factories, really all over the country, all over the world, has been suspect. And, of course, the tornado goes in there. And you could argue that a building taking a direct hit from a tornado is not going to fare very well, no matter who built the building or how they built it. But there are some reports that have started to gurgle here recently that say that the way they are building these buildings, it's just a matter of time before something catastrophic is going to happen. And people who are just there pulling their daily shift, putting in their 8 hours, end up dead because the people who built the building did not take into consideration how damaging something can end up. If, for example, there's no place for them to hide, there's no like blockhouse where they can all run into and hide until the storm has passed. People shouldn't die having to go to work every day. And so these reports have been gurgling for a while now. The government has said, yeah, this is bullshit. These buildings are catastrophic situations just waiting to happen. You know what the government has done with those reports? Nothing. And so it will happen again. It was on this date in 1981. I just said, that's it. I've had it. I'm good enough to work in Chicago. And so I quit my job in Omaha, Nebraska, Johnny Carson's old station. I quit my job in 1981 and I moved back home in Chicago with my parents. And I just said, I'm camping out here and I am going to litter the entire Chicago area with audition tapes trying to get a job in Chicago radio. I'm tired of living out in the sticks. And so I did. And roughly 6 months later, after I had sent out 69 tapes to 69 different radio stations, my friend who was running DC 101 in Washington, D.C., home of Howard Stern at that time, said, look, I could use some help out here. You want to come to Washington? And I said, sure, why not? And I had some fun there. And Washington, D.C. is a very, very exciting place, but you got to have money. You got to have money, and I didn't. So I didn't get to enjoy the benefits of living in one of the most exciting American cities there is. And it's beautiful, too. A lot of gridlock. Everything's really expensive. But boy, it was an exciting time. And Howard was there for at least, I think he was there for about the first 4 months that I was there. This was 1982, we're talking about. And after Howard left, a gentleman by the name of Smash came in from Indianapolis. And he and I became very good friends, still are today. And then that gig led me to Buffalo. Buffalo led me to St. Louis in 1984, and the rest is history. I always tell people, and it is true, by the time Howard left Washington, D.C. in the summer of 1982 to go to WNBC, there were probably about three people in the building still talking to him, and I was one of them. Howard and I got along very, very well, and then I would see him subsequently at the Grammys every year, and we always had a kind word for one another, and he came on the air with me. You know, and whether you listened to his old shows or my old shows, you might remember this, that every spring they would have the Grammys in either New York or L.A., and they would invite about 30 of the biggest radio stations around the country, and they had ran out a big ballroom. In one case, it was the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel ballroom, which is a tremendously legendary hotel. The ghosts in that place were just amazing, you know. So these 30 radio stations would set up in almost like a Carnival Midway type situation, and then they would bring in like Fleetwood Mac, and Fleetwood Mac would just hop from table to table to table to table to table, and they could be interviewed by 30 radio stations in about 2 hours. So it was a win-win for everyone. So I say to Howard, you got to come on the air with me. He goes, I'll do it the last day. I'll do it the last day.
The A-List Interview with JC and the Morning Show, Graham.
My old pal and the king of all media, Howard Stern.
You know, here comes Howard.
Howard, come here.
Howard, sit down.
How you doing?
Now I'm in St. Louis, Robin. Oh, we live on the air?
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
Okay, I'm in St. Louis now. Robin, this is the radio station that got cited by the FCC, too. JC knows this. I believe what they're getting cited for by the FCC, they deserve to be punished by the FCC.
Howard says to me, he looks at the story and goes, now see, he gives me a big smile and says, now see, I wouldn't have done that.
No, here's the deal, Robin. We got on the air and we made some vague references to genitals and stuff, and we're cited by the FCC. So then these guys get on and start reading directly from, what was it, Playboy?
From Playboy. Yeah. We read your friend Jessica Hahn. We read the interview.
Yeah. And you had to read every dirty word that was in the magazine.
There were no dirty words.
Yeah, but did you guys read about certain acts?
Yes, we did.
And what's the dirty word? But you guys went way too far. I didn't. You guys did. And that's all I'm going to say about it. Good night.
Please stay out of St. Louis. I got a wife and a kid now, okay?
JC, I'm coming for you, baby.
JC and the Morning Show, Graham.
Never, never a dull moment with Howard. Wow. Been a while since I've heard that. All right, Billboard magazine released its list of the highest grossing tours of 2022. My Chemical Romance at number 20 with $87 million. You got Bieber, Dua Lipa, Guns N' Roses, Eagles, Paul McCartney, Billie Eilish at 14. Daddy Yankee at number 13 with $125 million. Lady Gaga, Morgan Wallen, The Weeknd, Kenny Chesney, Def Leppard, Motley Crue, Red Hot Chili Peppers, $177 million, 7th place. The Stones in 6th place, Coldplay, Harry Styles, Ed Sheeran, Elton John at 2 with $334.4 million. And Bad Bunny, number 1, $373.5 million. The Guillermo del Toro Pinocchio with Ewan McGregor as the voice of Jiminy Cricket is on Netflix starting today. Emancipation with Will Smith, Steve Martin, and Martin Short hosting Saturday Night Live with Brandi Carlile on Saturday night. Sunday Night Football, Chargers hosting the Miami Dolphins. National Christmas Tree Lighting celebrating 100 years on CBS Sunday night at 7. Final episode of The White Lotus on HBO Sunday night. Late night tonight, Jimmy Fallon's got Miley Cyrus. Everybody else is off. Birthdays today, Simon Helberg from Big Bang, 42. Jacob Dylan, 53. Felicity Huffman, 60. Donny Osmond is 65. John Malkovich, 69. Dick Butkus is 80. Bo Bridges, 81. Dame Judi Dench is 88. Birthday Saturday, Raven Simone from The Cosby Show, 37. Bobby Flay, The Iron Chef, 58. Kenneth Branagh, 62. Rob Blagojevich, 66. And Lori Partridge, Susan Day, is 70. Birthdays on Sunday, Haley Steinfeld, big up-and-coming star. She sings, she acts, she does everything. 26. Monique, 55. Nikki Six from Motley Crue, 64. Terry Garr, 75. Brenda Lee, Rocking Around the Christmas Tree, at 78. John Kerry, 79. Donna Mills from Knott's Landing. And the first time ever I saw your face. Play Misty for me, 82. David Gates from Bread, 82. Rita Moreno from West Side Story is 91. And Brittany Griner is free. That's the big story today. Great news for her. Terrible news for her Cell Blocks basketball team. Most depressing and boring place she's ever been, other than the WNBA. And with that, the J.C. Corcoran podcast for Friday, December 9th, 2022, is in the can. 68 days until pitchers and catchers report to Jupiter, Florida. We may have some news next week. We may have some news. And other than that, enjoy your weekend. Let everybody know we're here every weekday morning with the J.C. Parkman Podcast. You can email me, JC at JCOnTheLine.com, Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Parkman. Have a great weekend, everybody. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.